Alright, so usually try to keep every week's topic to be self-contained, and hopefully that's going to be still somewhat true over the next 3 weeks, but this week's class and probably the next two classes are all really part of one structure, and we're going to be primarily talking about the Rambam's discussion of his opinion, his approach to Hashem's knowledge and awareness of what's going on in the world, and Hashem's hashkacha, his interaction with the world, as opposed to, in contrast to, the opinion of other philosophies which the Rambam brings up and discusses his problems with them. So this week we're going to just see the Rambam his discussion of the philosophies that he is coming to negate and how he responds to them, and then the next 2 weeks we'll be discussing the Rambam's own position, and all of that's going to tie back into the principle here. So the discussion is going to be somewhat interrelated over the next over the coming weeks. Maybe even some of the sources that we'll see you're going to see more than once. This week's discussion. So the Rambam in the text of the 10th principle, unlike I believe any of the other principles, specifically lays out the philosophy that he is not saying, like the wrong impression. He says, we believe that Hashem is Yodei Masi B'nei Adam Lo Is Niham V'lo Kedas HaOmer Azav Hashem Es Haaretz. Not like those who say Azav Hashem Es Haaretz. Not like those who say that Hashem has abandoned or left, deserted the world. So, to see exactly who the Rambam is saying not like, and hopefully get a little bit, by contrast, a better understanding of what he is saying. So we're going to be seeing a number of excerpts from the third section of Mor Nevochim, primarily in chapters 16 through 19. This week is going to be mostly in chapter 16, but we will be jumping around a little bit. But see how the Rambam. So first, we're going to see how the Rambam describes the other philosophies. And there's primarily 2 points that the Rambam lays down as the basis or the driving motivation for these other philosophies. And then he piles on a couple of more, let's call them technical, philosophical problems. But primarily 2 points that are being dealt with. So we'll see both of those, and we'll see how the Rambam responds to both of those. And if we have time, we'll also see how the Rambam deals with the other side issues that he brings up. So the Rambam writes very strongly at the beginning. He writes, "Hispartzus ha-philosophim kalape Hashem yisala ve'inyin idiyaso es zulaso." There was an infraction by the philosophers regarding Hashem in the matter of his knowledge of things other than himself. His partus chamurim od, a very severe infraction. V'nichshelu machshalash ein lehem tekuma mimenu. They have stumbled, a stumbling from which they cannot get up. V'hineni mashmiacha hateuyos asher hipilu b'mashnis partu bo. I'm going to inform you what the mistake that they made was, which caused them, which led them to fall into this mistake. V'ashmiacha gam hashkavas to asinu b'kach, and I'll tell you the Torah's hashkafa on these issues. V'hochach asinu negdam b'hashkafo sehem. Hagruos b'hamuzaros b'inyan diyas Hashem, and our, let's call it, counterproofs regarding their outlook of the strange things that result from their view in the matter of Hashem's knowledge. Now, before we go any further, I think we mentioned this either last week or 2 weeks ago, but that there's a very important caveat in the Rambam's language, which is the Rambam uses the word Yediya of Hashem in two contexts. There's the first context is what we is what we would describe as that Hashem is has an awareness of what happens in existence, and that we said the Rambam says, and we'll see that even many of the philosophers who he's disagreeing with say that God's, so to speak, awareness of all of existence is kind of not up for discussion. The bare minimum that God has a basic knowledge of everything that's going on, that happens in existence, that's an obvious consequence of the fact that God created and in an ongoing way maintains existence. That the Rambam, right in the first principle, and even the Greek philosophers who he was disagreeing with agreed on this point, that God is the source of existence, and existence is only possible because of God's existence, and therefore the ongoing continuation of existence is only because of the ongoing continuation of God facilitating that existence. So if God is causing all of existence to exist, so then obviously he knows what's going on in existence. The question is, in an ongoing way, does God take interest in what's going on in the world? Is God, let's call it, is he paying attention? Are the events that happen in the world, the infinite, you know, details that of all the individual things that happen in the world, is God, you know, do all of those, so to speak, do they occur to God? Right? Does God realize? Does God deal with that information? Right? That's kind of the word for yediya, for God's knowledge that we're talking about now. And then there's a third term, or really a second term, but a third aspect, which is what we're going to discuss next week, or next time we meet, which is the idea of hashkafa, which is maybe the best translation is providence, but God's, so to speak, guidance or involvement in the world, on top of what he's taking interest in, how he gets involved based on that. That's going to be a third point. But so what we're kind of moving past is the fact that God has this basic awareness of existence and what's going on in the world. So what we're talking about now is that part that of what God, on an ongoing, let's call it the case by case point as events occur, God knowing about them and taking interest in them. So he says that the philosophers, that they had their belief, which we'll see what it is in a minute, but he says that they'll tell you what led them to their mistake. So he says, Rashi, Hipilam Yoser Bekach, that which the most led them to this belief, the Hevium Elav Tchila, what originally led them to this, and we'll see why he says it's originally, but the primary reason that they arrived at this conclusion, Humasha Nira Bereshis HaMachshava, that which it appears at first glance, at first thought, Meheder Sidiros Matzava Ishe B'nei Adam, the situation, the human situation seems to be disorganized, which means shemiksas ishe b'nei adam hachasidim l'chaim ra'im u'mitzarim. It seems like you have some people who are very righteous who are suffering, u'mitzas b'nei adam arshayim l'chaim tovim v'ne'imim, and you have some people who seem to be very wicked who seem to be living a pleasant life. V'heviyam davar zeh lidei kach shechalku es achuluk azu asher tishma apa. And this led them to make the following calculation, the following line of reasoning. So now the Rambam is about to lay out a very, let's call it, self-evident line of reasoning, which the Rambam himself is going to say makes a lot of sense. The one plot, the one detail which is going to kind of make it or break it, is going to be basically this point we just made here, that these other philosophers, their starting point is that obviously the world is not is you know, it could be better, right? If someone was making sure, you know, obviously everyone's not getting what they deserve, right? That was the assumption that they're making. So the Rambam says, he says that there's, well, start with two options. Oh, Shein, at the top of the second column there, oh, Shein Hashem Yodea Me'uma Min HaMatzav La'ishim HaLalu Ve'inu Ma'ase Yosam. Either Hashem does not take interest in what's going on in the world, and he doesn't say, he doesn't comprehend them. Oh, shehu masigam v'yodam, or he does know, right? That seems pretty machrach, that it's pretty, it has to be either God knows or he doesn't know. There's no other option. So now let's assume for a moment that he knows. Im hayam masigam v'yodam, if he does know, lo yibata davar me'achan mishlosha chalakim. So it's one of three options. There's only three possibilities. O shayasdiram v'yinalim al sidr atov b'yoser v'hamushlam v'hatamim. Either God would guide and direct the world in the best way possible, and everything would be complete, and everything would be wholesome. O shenivtzar minenu v'hasdiram v'ein lo yicholas l'kach. Or God is incapable of doing so. God would very much like to keep the world in the perfect organized way, but you know, he doesn't have the ability to. He knows what's going on, and he could make it all good. But he doesn't care. God he knows what's going on, he's aware, he could make it good, but God just disdains the world and doesn't bother to fix the world up the way it should be, and just, you know, lets it be in its incomplete state, because he just, you know, can't bring himself to care. Either he's because he's, you know, jealous, or because he just doesn't have, you know, isn't nice, whatever it would be. But that, so those are the three options. If God knows what's going on in the world, either he makes everything great, he can't make everything great, or he doesn't care to make everything great. He doesn't care enough to make everything great, right? That the Rambam says, and that's, he says, so far everything we've said that's true. Those are the options. It has to be one of those. Well, that would be, yes, it's true. That would be kind of a subset of the first option, which is going to be somewhat of what we'll see the Rambam's response. But that's an alternate interpretation of what it means that God set it up the best way possible, is that God determined the best way possible would be to do it in such and such a way, right? Which is basically what the Rambam is going to get to. I want to basically go through exactly how the Rambam presents it, just because the way he presents it as a very poignant kind of contradiction within the opinion of the philosophers themselves, to see exactly, but basically the point you're making is a very valid one, that you're making an assumption that the best way is what you think the best way would be. Right.
And you talk about the philosophers. They started with a similar opinion that there is a God and that he created the world. But are we talking about Greek and Roman? And they have a pantheon. There are many gods, and they have a whole explanation about how they fight each other.
Right. So the Greek philosophy. So it's two parts. So the Greek philosophers, who the Rambam usually refers to, is Aristotle and Plato. And I don't know enough to know what he felt about the pantheon, but even the pantheon had what they called the God of Gods, which was that above the entire system of, you know, demigods was the ultimate, you know, reason for creation, which we kind of discussed this when we discussed the fourth principle of Kadmos Olam, that at the very basic, that they believed that there had to be an original cause of existence. If that original cause of existence may be irrelevant at this point, because that original cause is responsible for basically facilitating existence, because otherwise existence could have never happened. But now we have, you know, our intermediate gods, who those are who we deal with, and kind of somewhat gets involved with how the Rambam understands Avodah Zarah, that Avodah Zarah, the Rambam, we saw this when we did the fifth principle, the Rambam does not say Avodah Zarah is someone who says that there's no one god, rather there's, Baal. The person who believes in Avodah Zarah, the primary belief of Avodah Zarah, assume that even though there is one God, there are underlings who we deal with. We deal with intermediaries who, you know, so to speak, supply the goods, right? And they don't care about what God says or what God's interested in, because I'd rather deal with, you know, someone who's giving me what I want instead of dealing with, you know, this ultimate cause of all of creation. But even the Greek philosophers believed in whether it's above everything else or it's the only thing in this one original ultimate source of creation. So he says, "Va'kasher chalku chaluka zu." On the next page, "Va'kasher chalku chaluka zu." Chartu mishpat v'amir. Once they made these splits, they split it into these, let's call it four options. Either God does not know what's going on in the world, or he does know, and either he makes everything good, he can't make everything good, or he doesn't care. So once they did this, they split into that, and they so to speak declared kishnei chalakim mishloshes chatam alalu, two of these three options of within God knowing what goes on in the world, shem chiyuvim lechol mishiyodea nimnaim kelape Hashem yisale. Two of these three options are impossible by God. They are unquestionably, axiomatically not true by God. V'heim, mash'enu yachol, to say that God is incapable. O yachol v'enu mashkia, or that he knows and he doesn't take care. He doesn't care. Kizem midara o choser yicholas, because either you're giving God bad midos, or you're giving God impotence. You're making God incapable. It says those two things are by definition not true about God. God is above both of those things. So we're only left from this entire division with two things. Either God does not know what's going on, or he does know, and he's laid everything out to be the best possible. Now they say, we see that the world is chaotic and there's no logic to what's going on in the world. There's no order. Things are not going the way they should. So there are only two possibilities. Either God does not know, or God knows and makes everything great. And we see that everything is not great. So the only thing left is that God, the only point that remains, said these philosophers, was that God does not know. God doesn't have any either direct knowledge or indirect knowledge of what's going on. This is what originally drove them to this hispartzus, this infraction in belief in understanding God's awareness of the world. And that the first point was basically this point, that they said the world is not the way it should be, and therefore the only way it could be that way is if God doesn't know what's going on in the world.
I understand that logic. Why can't they just argue God knows what's going on, but if God is an evil God?
So that was one of the axiomatic points of how they define God, was that God is above, let's call it, emotions or drives, meaning that I guess the way the most basic point is part of the definition of God was that he's complete. But to put it in slightly different terms, that a person is mean or evil or wicked or whatever it is because of some negative kind of emotion like jealousy or anger or whatever it is, and they said God is their understanding of God, which was also, you know, the Rambam's is also Judaism's understanding. God is above having anger or jealousy or desire or things like this. So for God to be an evil God makes no sense because God is above all of that. So therefore, for them, it was not an option to say that you know, there is a God and he knows, but he's just evil, because their understanding of what it meant to be God was that he's, you know, he's above and, so to speak, prior to, he's God's not a being within the world who might have, you know, these feelings. He's above and beyond the world, and therefore he can't have any of the negative qualities that a created being might have, because he exists in a state of existence which is above all of that.
No, I'm not saying, okay, maybe not evil is not the right word, but that our sense of good is different than God's sense of good. So we think that God's not doing good things, but maybe they can, why can't those people believe that God's sense of good is different than ours? It's not about that, not that he's giving into emotion, like you're saying, he's giving into jealousy or anger, but he has a different moral code, you know, God's moral code is different than we thought.
So, okay, so, well, God's moral code is different than we thought, meaning that, like, we think that, like, helping old ladies cross the street is good, but really beating them up and taking their purse is good, or that...
Not that it's beating them up, but that it's nothing. Letting them cross the street is not good or bad. It's just like indifferent.
You're just indifferent. So, all right.
Where they want to go.
I'm saying, why don't they believe it? Like, why do you have to reject this? They have to believe that God is all good God.
So the point you're making is very similar to the point that Mr. Weinstein was making, which is a point that the Rambam is going to be, not in the way that you're making it. I don't know if I could explain very sufficiently exactly why it is that they had a definition of what good is, which they superimposed on God, but the Rambam also accepts that, you know, part of you know, the nature of God. Well, I shouldn't say the nature of God. That's probably not. But that God is complete, and once God is complete, so it makes sense that he would only do things which are complete, and completion means being the best it could be. That's probably the best way that I could construct the argument. I think there's more rigor to it than that, but I guess that's the basics of it, that God is perfect, and therefore if he were to be directing things, he would make them perfect. And I guess, you know, we have somewhat of a more objective idea of what perfection is, and the question is going to be, who says that what you define as perfect is what God defines as perfect? Alright. So he says, on the second column here, he says, says the Rambam, that was what was really their driving motivation to arrive at this conclusion. Once they reached that point, bo acharkach lasalig zaruso, they wanted to kind of say that this wasn't such a weird thing, right? They're suggesting that God doesn't know what's going on in the world, and the Rambam in the paragraph that we're skipping really says that, you know, that's really an even more terrible thing to say that God doesn't know, is it's particularly in the Rambam's worldview, where knowledge is the absolute ideal of creation and existence. So to attribute to God lack of knowledge is, you know, so to speak, making God into a fool is like the worst thing you could have ever done. Because once they, you know, had created that this was the necessary conclusion, so they wanted to kind of philosophically justify why it wasn't such a strange thing. And now they presented several philosophical arguments of why it had to be this way. He said that God's knowing these things is really impossible for several reasons. It says that the individual details of what happens in the world are only perceived through our senses. The Ein Hashem Masig B'Chush, God doesn't know things through senses. God doesn't smell. We might have, you know, psukim in the Torah that talk about a Reach Nichoach, but that's just speaking in human terms. God, in his, you know, basic essence, doesn't have, you know, ears and a nose. He doesn't smell and hear. Umehem Shapratim Ein Lam Sof, Vayidia Yihakav Kvali, says that the details of what happens in the world are endless. And knowledge means to be an enveloping understanding of something. V'davash ein l'sof yasher akifo b'yadia. Something which is endless, you can't have an all-encompassing knowledge of if it's endless. Hu mehem sheyadia samischad shos shehem chalkim b'li safik. The endless details are all individual points. Mechayvim lo shinoi mesuyam. If God were to comprehend them as they happen, would mean that there would be changes going on in God. Rafisha, he is chadish ha'idia, ha'idia. He's coming, God knew something, now he knows something else, so now God knows more than he knew before. So that means you're attributing a change to God, and God doesn't change. Right? God is objectively already complete, and therefore for God to know something now that he didn't know before, that they said would be another impossibility of God coming to know it, and therefore it can't be. So that's, we're going to put all of that under point number one. Point number one was they said that God can't know, that obviously God doesn't know what's going on in the world, because they said if he does, it doesn't make any sense. And now that we're saying he doesn't know, our arguments are because God doesn't have senses to detect these things, God doesn't change. Fine, we'll get back to that in a minute. I'm going to try and speed up a little bit here so that we can try and finish on time. He says that the Rambam goes on to explain five different views of Hashgacha, of God's providence in the world, and we're going to get back to these in the coming weeks. But in his second one, he presents the position of Aristotle, and he says he's going to do you a favor and sum it up for you. Hashgava Shania, ki Hashgava Misha Sover, ki Mitzas Adram Yishbem Hashgava, Vehim Ban Hagas Manig Varichas Orich. Some things have Hashgava and have a guiding direction behind them. Umitzasam Muznach Lemikrim. Some of them are left up to chance, to happenstance. Vizui Hashgavas Aristo. That's the Hashgava of Aristotle. Vehinani Masakim Lachan Hashgavas Hashgava. I'll sum up his Hashgava for you very briefly. Ku Savor ki Hashem Yisal Mashkiach Aha Dalgalim. God is overseeing the celestial bodies and all that's involved with that. And therefore they stay constant. They are mute, and they are static, and they remain unchanging. And Aristotle believed that was the only application of Hashem's Hashgacha, because of the following. This was a result of Aristotle's belief in Kadmas HaOlam and the eternity of matter, the eternity of existence. Meaning, which we went through this at length when we did the fourth principle, just like God is eternal, so too everything that exists was eternal. Because for the same kind of argument we were saying before, that God doesn't change, and therefore for existence to have first not existed and then yes existed, so God would have had to, you know, at some point decide to take existence from non-existence to existence. And that would have been, you know, God what suddenly had a desire to create. So Aristotle said it must be that just like God is eternal and has always existed, existence, the world, has always existed. And therefore he said that the nature of existence is that the old God, in his being eternal and unchanging, so is only involved in that which is eternal and unchanging. And therefore, the, you know, from the Greek, you know, limited view of the history of the universe, they saw the celestial bodies as being unchanging and permanent. We know now that that's not true anyways, but they saw the celestial bodies as being unchanging and eternal. And therefore he said that God's hashgacha is over those things because those are unchanging and eternal. Anything which is unchanging and eternal, so it's not a problem for God to be directly involved with that, because it's not, God can be directly involved with it in a constant unchanging way. God has it set on, you know, so to speak, an autopilot kind of involvement where it's constant and being kept consistent, and therefore that's what God's involvement is in. So the second point is the philosophy of Aristotle of Cosmos Olam, which said that the world is that God's involvement is only in those things which don't change, and that's really the only area where God could be involved in, because by definition God is unchanging, and therefore his involvement in the world is only going to be in those things which are unchanging. Fine. So that was the philosophical underpinnings of the arguments that the Rambam is rejecting with the tenth principle. The tenth principle says specifically that God knows what's going on in knows the actions of man, and not like those who say also v'shem es ha'aretz. So now we'll see what the Rambam's reply to them. So the Rambam writes, next page, Yesod Torah Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Shalom B'kol Hachum Acharei, foundational principle of the Torah is Sha'adam Ba'al Yecholas Mochletas. A person has the ability to act, which is Kolomar, which means Sheyesh B'tivo U'Bebechiraso V'Cheftzo Lasos Kol Masha B'Yad Adam Lasos. That man has the free will to do whatever he decides to do, Belisha Yivrilo Shum Davar Mechodesh Klal, without, and this is a difficult line to explain without getting into a lot of Arabic philosophy, but basically without anything new being created, that man has the ability to act upon his own will. Which means, which we've discussed this before, on a very simplistic level, to do things which are only because of his own decision to do them, and are not part of a divine decision of that specifically was had to be done that way. V'chein nechal yisodos haTorah, jumping up to the top of the next column. V'chein nechal yisodos haTorah, Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu, shehu yisale ein ava lefanav b'shum panim v'open, that God has absolutely no iniquity, no twistedness. V'shekol haba al b'nei avam mina yisurim, anything that comes to man of suffering, O Masha Magiyalom et Raham Minatov, any good, any benefit that comes to man, Ha'adam Hayachid Oatzibor, whether it be an individual person or to an entire community, Ha'kol Mitnesham Ru'uyim Lakach, the Mishpat Atzedek, Asher Ein Avel Boklal, is all because this is exactly what is fitting for that person in the absolute justice, which has no crookedness to it. Vafilu nagaf adam bekotz biyado v'salko miyad. Even if a person were to get a little thorn in his finger and take it out immediately, get a tiny little prick, tiny little sting, and immediately pull it out, some tiny little point of pain, harei zat lo onesh. That happened to him because of some punishment. Vafilu hisig hana kol shehu ki yezo zelo gemul. And even if he gets some modicum, some iota of pleasure, that was a compensation for something. The kol zel yosa royal path, it all happens because he is fitting for that. Vehu amro yisale ki kol drop of mishpat ala she'in anu yodim heach nasu ru'uyim. Like the Torah says, that kol drop of mishpat, everything that Hashem does, is an application of justice, of a system. Just we don't have the ability, because the system is so complicated. The Rambam goes through this in Hilchos Tshuva. The system is so complicated, we don't have the ability to really assess what we think was a great, incredible achievement. So it's hard for us to know if that was really something small, and what we think was really an incredible failure. It's hard for us to know in God's eyes how big of a failure was that. From God's perspective and God's value system, exactly what that was.
Well, I thought, though, like, the Sasadic dies early. Like, the Sasadic dies early for some reason. And we say, I thought we were supposed to say, well, you can't say, well, he must have done something wrong to deserve it. And why, it's just part of Hashem's grand plan, you know, grand plan.
Say it again?
If a Sasadic dies early, you get, you know, killed early in his life. I thought we, you're not supposed to say, well, he must have deserved to die. Because you can say, well, Hashem has some grand plan, and maybe whatever the plan is, he was, you know, he fell into that. So this here makes it sound like when something bad happens to you, you deserve it.
Right. So this is a point of discussion among the Rishonim, but the Rambam held that everything that happens, and I don't think I have it in our source sheet, but the Rambam is actually very explicit about this. The Rambam held that everything that happens, that there's no such thing as anything happening to anyone that was not strictly an application of what's supposed to happen to him as a matter of mishpat. So the Rambam says basically that the system.
But he probably would say that us humans are not, shouldn't delve into that, the reason.
Right, yeah, so the Rambam will tell you that we can't point at anyone and say, you know, he got punished for such and such a thing, because we don't know what the system is. We also don't know, you know, we never know how long a person was supposed to live. We never know how long a person, you know, what was the nature of the way that person was created, how their life was supposed to be. It could be that someone who, to us, seems like they got, you know, the short end of the stick, that they really, because of their righteousness, had actually gotten much more than you know, the what went into how they were created. But the Rambam, the first point that the Rambam makes is that everything that Hashem does is a matter of tzedek, which we are incapable of necessarily comprehending, because we don't know how God views every individual thing that happens. So, just to see the Rambam really quickly, in Hilchos Tshuva, just running out of time here, but we have a couple more things to see. But so the Rambam says, regarding this idea of the free will, the Ein Lo Misha, this is in Hilchos Tshuva Perek Hey, the Ein Lo Misha Yichafehu, the Lo Gozer Alav, the Lo Misha Moshko Re'achan Mishnei Adrachim, there's no one bringing him in any way, influencing him to go in one of the two ways of being wicked or righteous. He, on his own accord, goes whichever way he wants. This is what Yirmiyahu meant when he said that good and bad does not come from God. What does that mean? God does not decree on a person whether he's going to be good or bad. The kevan shagain, and that being the case, the person who sins is bringing the bad upon himself, and the person who does good is bringing the good to himself. He should really be weeping over the bad that he has brought unto himself. But what does it mean that the wicked person is ultimately responsible for bringing the evil, the wicked that happened, the bad things that happened to him, because of his own choice to be wicked resulted in that happening to him. So what it means that God, so to speak, does not do that is because God is not the ultimate cause of why that had to happen. That happened because the man chose on his own to do something bad, and there was a consequence to that. Man chose to do something good, there was a consequence to that.
So even an addict and even Paro?
So Paro, the Rambam has a discussion that part of divine punishment can be to lose your free will. Right, the Rambam has a lengthy discussion about that in the Hilchos Tshuva.
Paro instigated it.
Exactly, it was a punishment to Paro. Paro, in the first five makos, or however many it was on his own choice, did it. And after that, God says that he was mechabid libo. But part of the punishment for him was to lose his free will. All right, so one last source to see. This is in response to the second point. Davar muskum ledivrei hakol shehu yisal lo yitachon sheis tischadish lo yedia ad sheyeda ata mashal lo yada oso mikodim. It is obvious that, and agreed upon by everyone, that there's nothing that can be innovated to God such that he knows something now that he didn't know before. And also that he's going to have many individual points of knowledge. The Kaven Shehuchach Davarzeh, since that's obvious, Amrinan Anu Ka Toratim, we, the Torah community, say, God knows all of these details with one encompassing knowledge. In the way that God knows things, that he doesn't connect to him, relate back to him, a change in himself through the nods that he gets. He's going to explain all these things. So too we say that a God, all these things that happen, he knows them before they happen. And therefore, there's no new knowledge that ever comes to God, because God knows everything that's happening before it happens. That's the Rambam's answer to that question about God doesn't change, so how can he know things? Is that he's not knowing something new as it happens. God's knowledge, and really in the next chapter, which we're not going to see today, the Rambam describes that really God's knowledge preceded everything that happened in such a way that everything that happens is an outcome of God's knowing it. God is not gaining knowledge of things as they happen. They're happening as a result of God's knowledge which preceded it happening. So there is no innovation through God knowing something. That even those things which do not exist, God knows about them before they exist. So therefore, there's no reason why God's knowledge cannot encompass something which does not exist, because the nature of his knowledge is that his knowledge is prior to existence, to something's existing. And that being the case, that's the answer, really. We're over time now, so not going to go into how that answers all the questions that the Rambam started with of the knowing things that are infinite, knowing things, knowing all the details, but basically that God's knowledge is this encompassing foreknowledge. There's one last point I want to see, which is the most important point, which I'm sorry that we're over time, but very briefly, Vasherani Omer, Shekol Mashenichro Bo Kulam. The mistake that they made, Sibaso Mipnesha also bain the Yediasenu Vyediaso Yisala Yachas. That they made an equation between our knowledge and God's knowledge. They see everything which is, you know, impossible in our knowledge, in the way in which we know and understand the world. And they say that must be how it is with God's knowledge also. You should really rebuke the philosophers about this more than anyone else. They are the ones who said that God, in his essence, is completely one. And there's nothing outside of God. God's knowledge is, says the Rambam, an inherent part of who God is, and that God is one, and his knowledge is part of that oneness. The Hema Sherochichu, and they are the ones who prove. Ki tiktarena dos deusinu milahase amitas atmu sokafishi kamoshimaru. They are the ones who prove that we are incapable of grasping God's essence. They are the ones who prove that we can't understand God. The Heachashu Sheyasigu Yidiyaso. So how did they think, if we can't understand God, how did they think we're going to understand the nature of God's knowledge? His knowledge is part of him. So that same lack, shortness of grasp, which makes us incapable of grasping the infinite, of grasping God himself, that's the same thing that prevents us from understanding what God's knowledge is. Kach anu omrim, skipping down to those last bottom lines, ki osa ha'atmos mesiga komash azulasa, that same atmos, that same essence, grasps everything else, vo nala mimeno davar klal mi komash ayimtza, and there's nothing, there's no shortcoming, there's nothing that it's incapable of. The ein shitov ben yediyasenu v'yediyaso, ke ein shein shitov ben atmosenu v'atmoso, and there's no connection, there's no link you can make between our awareness, our knowledge, and God's knowledge in such a way that you could superimpose based on the way that we understand that that's the way that God understands. That's the Rambam's answer to all of the philosophical problems, that God's knowledge is going to be limited in the same way that our knowledge is limited, and God has to know and understand in the same way that we do. That was the basic error that they made, was assuming that the way we see the world and the way we understand the world is the way that God has to understand it. And that's a fundamental error, which they themselves really are the ones who proved that that's an error. And so to get back to the other point, it's really the same point when it comes to what we were all raising before, that God has this fundamental mishpat, this fundamental judgment, and our definition of why someone deserves good or bad is not necessarily to impose on God that because I think that that's not the way it should be, that God has to think that's not the way it should be. That's a fundamental mistake in trying to understand the nature of God's knowledge is completely different. The nature of God's understanding is completely separate and disconnected from ours, and to think that because I think it should be this way, that's the way that God should think, that's a fundamental error, and therefore God to be ultimately in charge of everything and guiding everything, and for us to not be able to see that that's the way that it should be, that makes absolute sense, because God's knowledge is fundamentally different than our own knowledge. Next week we're going to get into the Rambam's own view of how all of this works out. Not next week, 2 weeks from now. Next week we're off, and we'll pick up from there. All right.